produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world. Featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Thursday, February 14th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Remember, marijuana isn't going to re-legalize itself. You can make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. Join up with the talented volunteer activists of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws at normal.org. Welcome everyone here to the Stash today. It's Valentine's Day, so a hempy Valentine's Day to all the lovers out in the audience and for those of you seeking love. And I also want to give a special shout out to my beautiful wife of the past 7 years, 1 month, and 13 days. I'm not really counting, it's just we were married on January 1st, 2001, so it's easy to count. Anyway, happy Valentine's Day, my love. Thank you for pushing me into the world of broadcasting. I'm having more fun now than I can ever remember, especially hosting the Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now, for the Stash today, today is Cannabis and the Law Day, and coming up after the news, we're taking questions from our loyal listeners about the law in our Ask an Attorney segment. This week, criminal defense attorney and Normal Legal Committee member John Lucy IV addresses roadside searches, clean paraphernalia, and medical marijuana state reciprocity. We've also got some live music from Grammy winners Los Lonely Boys from back in the day when they were a Texas club band with a Valentine's appropriate song, I Don't Want to Lose Your Love. We've got an interview with travel writer Rick Steves on the European perception of marijuana, and we round out the podcast today with Normal's deputy director, Paul Armentano, with a look at the latest political battles over marijuana at the state level. So, Hempy Valentine's Day, we got some special green chocolates for you. Now sit back with your favorite strain and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Medical marijuana's backers and critics speak at the Capitol in Topeka, Kansas. Several people urged lawmakers Monday to approve a measure that would allow some patients to use a note from their physician as an affirmative defense for possessing marijuana. Opponents, including law enforcement, the pharmacy board, and the Kansas Medical Society, questioned the plant's efficacy in treating symptoms of disease such as cancer and multiple sclerosis. Senator Susan Wagle, Republican of Wichita, the committee's chairwoman, said the medicines used to treat pain and nausea for cancer patients have come a long way. I don't see it as something that is necessary in this day and age, she said. Eric Voth, chairman of the Institute on Global Drug Policy, said the measure would create a get-out-of-jail-free card for people who could convince a physician they needed marijuana. However, patients with certain diseases and their families see marijuana as a relief to their suffering. When her son was suffering from multiple sclerosis, smoking marijuana stopped his screaming, said Bette Hulser of Topeka. After seeing my son, I knew then I would never do anything to stop him from smoking marijuana, said Hulser, who described herself as pretty straight-laced. Laura Green, the director for Kansas Compassionate Care Coalition, said she'd heard from hundreds of people whose family members had used marijuana to relieve their suffering from cancer and multiple sclerosis. We cannot continue to let these vulnerable people be convicted of illegal drug use when they are simply trying to gain relief from pain and suffering with their doctor's support, she said. Now, living out here in one of the medical marijuana states, out here in Oregon on the West Coast, I can testify as to marijuana's efficacy, having seen it in the patients that I help month after month at our medical marijuana meetings. It is definitely a helpful measure for multiple sclerosis, and it appalls me that there are still people out there, now regardless of what they may think about the legalization or decriminalization of marijuana, how they could stand in the way of people trying to alleviate pain and suffering for using it for medical purposes. It still amazes me that we're having these battles, but good for the people of Kansas for bringing the issue up and getting it discussed on the Senate floor. ACLU of Washington launches marijuana campaign with Rick Steves. Seattle, Washington, the American Civil Liberties Union of Washington State is launching a new campaign to get people talking about changing marijuana laws, and it's enlisted travel writer Rick Steves in the effort. Steves filmed a 30-minute video for the ACLU in which he says he has traveled all over Europe, and he's learned that it makes more sense to treat marijuana use as a public health issue than it does to arrest people for using it. The ACLU says it is trying to start a national conversation about whether American drug laws are working with regard to marijuana. The organization says nearly 830,000 people are arrested on marijuana charges every year, 90% of them for mere possession, and that the U.S. spends far more money arresting, prosecuting, and jailing people than it's worth. Now, coming up later on in the stash, I'll be broadcasting my interview with Rick Steves, taken at the National Normal Conference from 2007 in Los Angeles, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. He makes a lot of the points that he's made in this video about how the Europeans are looking at dealing with marijuana in their society. So stay tuned for that interview. There's a lot of very insightful points. Ansonia ordered to pay lawyer fees in student marijuana case. Bridgeport, Connecticut. A federal judge has ordered Ansonia, Connecticut School Board to pay nearly $18,000 in fees to a lawyer who successfully overturned the expulsion of a football player arrested on a marijuana charge. U.S. District Judge Janet C. Hall has awarded the payments to Gary Mastronardi for his representation of Tristan Roberts, a 17-year-old Ansonia High School junior. In November, Hall approved a settlement allowing Roberts, expelled for possessing marijuana, to return to school. Under the terms of the agreement, the school board permanently and unconditionally rescinds its expulsion order. A lawyer for the school system challenged both the system's liability for the legal fees and the $400 per hour Mastronardi requested for his work on the case. Now, here at Normal, we do not encourage the use of marijuana by anyone under the age of 18 for non-medical purposes. However, we also understand that expelling someone from school for the possession of marijuana is at best counterproductive and at worst harmful to the student. Wouldn't you want to keep the student in school where he can be observed by administrators? Wouldn't you want to keep the student in school where he can gain a better education and make a better lot for himself in life? The idea of throwing a student away just because they possess some marijuana seems very, very counterproductive to me.
What's up, guys? This is Ms. High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
Marijuana is completely prohibited by our federal government, but the laws and punishments for the cultivation, possession, and use of the relatively harmless cannabis plant vary from state to state. Normal Daily Audio Stash turns to the finest legal minds in cannabis law to give you the chance to ask an attorney. Send your questions to stash@normal.org. Normal's Ask an Attorney is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended to replace the advice of your own personal attorney. For a referral from our Normal Legal Committee and to learn more about the laws in your state, please visit normal.org. For this week's Ask an Attorney segment, we're very happy to have John Lucy IV, a criminal defense attorney from Portland, Oregon, with a focus on drug law, and you can find more on his practice at www.law420.com. Mr. Lucy was also the director of North Carolina Normal for 3 years. He just moved here from the North Carolina area and was also named Activist of the Month by High Times Magazine for his work with National Normal in Washington, D.C. In 2007, he also won the Activism Award from Normal in the field of marijuana law reform policy at the University of North Carolina School of Law. So, John Lucy, welcome to the Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks, Rob.
Sure did a good job getting that website domain there, Law420. I'm surprised that was still available.
I was, too.
And let's turn to the questions that we have here for our Ask an Attorney segment. We had done a story on one of the recent daily audio stashes about an appellate court decision in Saskatchewan, and one of our listeners writes in about this. It says, I heard about on the stash about the Saskatchewan court that ruled that the smell of burnt marijuana isn't enough grounds to justify searches and arrests. There must be some other probable cause because the smell of burnt marijuana rather than raw marijuana implies that the contraband no longer exists because it's burnt. How do the U.S. courts treat the smell of burnt marijuana? Does it justify a search?
You're going to hear me say something called "it depends," which pretty much every criminal defense attorney says about 100 times a day. The issue here is that the smell of burnt marijuana alone in certain states is enough to justify a search, but in other states, you have to have other indicia of possession of marijuana in order to effect a search. The difference here comes in part from the fact that some states treat internal possession of drugs as a crime. So the smell of burnt marijuana indicates to a police officer that a crime may in fact still be taking place, namely internal possession, or what most ordinary folks call being high.
I see. So it would just depend on a state-by-state basis, and of course you could always go to normal.org and check out the membership of the legal committee and find an attorney in your area.
The Normal website actually lists internal possession for a variety of states, so if you're worried about internal possession being an issue in your state, you should definitely check out the state-by-state listing for your state.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you for that. Now, we've got another question here, and this one, I thought this was a good one because when we do our Seattle Hemp Fest and we do other events with our chapter of Normal, we like to show the video Busted from the ACLU, which talks about your constitutional rights in a police encounter. And this person asked the question, I've seen one video that says you should never let a cop search your car. I saw another one that said that if your stash was well hidden, you should let him search. I'm not some dealer trucking 40 pounds around in a trunk. I'm just a guitar player who keeps a quarter or an eighth for personal use. I've got long hair, and I fit the description, he puts in quotes here. What do I do if I'm pulled over and the cop asks to search?
Never consent to a search. I know that there's a video out there circulating by a former undercover police officer claiming that you should allow a search. But Busted, a video put together by the ACLU, with many, many, many lawyers on staff, will tell you that you should not consent to a search. I personally tell all my clients, and it's even on my business cards, I do not consent to any searches when I wish to speak with my attorney. Your rights are only your rights if you exercise them. Don't give them up. Use them. Just say no to searches. Don't allow a search. If an officer wants to search your car and he's going to search your car, he's going to do it whether you want to or not. So just say no. That way, when it gets to court, you'll have a chance.
Yeah, there we go. That's what I like to tell people, too, is that, you know, there's nothing we can do about police misconduct if they're going to, you know, violate the law or violate our rights, other than to assert our rights and be able to stand up for them later in court. Now, another question here. This is an interesting one, a real short one. Can you be arrested for paraphernalia if you've never used it?
Once again, it depends. It primarily depends on the state. Most states have paraphernalia laws that are based on the intent of the possessor of the item rather than the item itself. States vary widely, and you should always check with a local attorney to be absolutely sure. The most likely result will be confiscation of the paraphernalia, and if it's clean, without some statement from you that you were going to use it to smoke marijuana or you're going to use it for another drug, likely no criminal charge will be pressed. But remember that every year the federal government raids head shops, pipe shops, and other places to clean paraphernalia, and Tommy Chong went to jail for 9 months for selling clean paraphernalia.
Here's a question. Now that we've got so many states here in the United States that have some form of medical marijuana protection, this is becoming more of an issue. The question is, if I'm a medical marijuana patient and I'm caught possessing medicine in another medical marijuana state, will they arrest me? And the follow-up here is, if I'm caught in a non-medical marijuana state, will the medical use help in court?
Generally, you're going to be arrested in another state if you don't have a valid card for that state. The exception to this is when a state has a medical marijuana reciprocity law. The only state that I currently know of that has a reciprocity law is Montana, which recognizes out-of-state cardholders, but only when they comply with Montana state limits. So you need to check with the individual state before traveling. Most other states don't have a reciprocity law, but you may be able to present an affirmative defense of medical use based on your medical card status in another state. For example, that holds true in Nevada and Oregon have that, because if you had a card in Oregon, you would have seen a doctor within the prescribed period for Nevada's affirmative defense. If you're caught in a non-medical state, your card status may sway a prosecutor to exercise a little bit of leniency, for example, but generally your medical status will not be admissible at trial. This has been a big issue, and we've seen it at the federal level, because in federal court, medical marijuana patients and growers are not allowed to discuss the fact that marijuana possessed or grown was for medical use, and that evidence can't be presented at trial. It just isn't allowed in.
They can't even say the words medical and marijuana in the same paragraph.
Medical and marijuana.
Wow, that's always just a stunning travesty of justice every time I have to mention that on the stash. So, well, those are some good questions. We want to remind everyone out there that if you've got a question for an attorney, every week here on the Daily Audio Stash, we're going to try to have one of the attorneys from the Normal Legal Committee to answer your questions here on Ask an Attorney. Just send your questions to stash@normal.org, and we'll get you on the air. John Lucy IV from Portland, Oregon, criminal defense attorney with the Normal Legal Committee. Thank you very much for being on the Stash today.
It was a pleasure, Ron.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. As we dig into the music archive here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, I'm really happy to be able to pull up this next tune. This is from the group Los Lonely Boys. You probably know them best for their Grammy-winning song, Heaven. They're the three-piece band of brothers playing Tex-Mex rock and roll down there out of Austin, Texas, home of Stevie Ray Vaughan. And this music comes from one of their first gigs prior to being discovered. Back in 2000, they played live in Dallas, Texas at a Stevie Ray birthday party gig. And this has just been released on the PodSafe Music, so we're able to play it here on the Stash. Now, of course, Los Lonely Boys, at least two-thirds of them, we can definitely cite as members of the cannabis community, friends of 420. Their drummer, Ringo Garza, yes, their drummer's name is Ringo. Their drummer, Ringo Garza, was busted with a small amount of marijuana, possession charge, and this was in January of 2005, prior to them having a gig for a Super Bowl engagement. I don't think it was at the Super Bowl, but it was at the Super Bowl festivities, and they lost that gig because of the high-profile arrest of their drummer. And a little while ago, I think it was last year, their bass player, Jojo Garza, was also arrested in Austin, Texas, with possession of a personal amount of marijuana. So definitely a band that's on our side. This is Los Lonely Boys and the song, I Don't Want to Lose Your Love. We'll be right back.
soul. Playing these games and messing with my mind. Girl, you made me believe you were only mine.
I'm a Mac.
And I'm a woman.
Okay, wait a second, what?
A woman. A hot, hot woman.
Okay, guys, this isn't apples to apples anymore.
Aw, are you scared?
No. Well, I've got video editing software.
And I've got breasts. Enough said.
You could use me to record a podcast?
Soft, pillowy breasts.
Okay, that's not fair, because you just can't...
Watch. When they jump up and down, they bounce.
Come on, you can connect your iPod to me.
Oh, I didn't wear a bra today.
Okay, let's be fair here. These guys can get a Mac.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Fucking dorks.
In our news segment, we had mentioned how the American Civil Liberties Union of Washington State had enlisted the help of travel author Rick Steves, author of Europe Through the Back Door, to help promote a rational discussion of drug policy in America. I sat down with Rick Steves back in October at the National Normal Conference in Los Angeles, California. We had a wide-ranging discussion, mostly including political topics like how the Europeans are perceiving and treating Americans abroad now that our government has got us embroiled in some very unpopular wars, at least from the European perspective. We moved our conversation into a discussion of the drug war, where Rick Steves talks about how the Europeans are focused more on a harm reduction model than an arrest and in prison model. We pick up the conversation halfway through in the middle of talking about perceptions of Americans abroad. So Americans have nothing to fear, you know, traveling in Europe. They're not looked down upon.
Oh, no. I was just on a tour in southern France, a little mom-and-pop winery, and we had like 8 or 10 people on the tour, a few Americans, a few Brits, a few other Germans or whatever. And the woman realized, oh, we've got Americans here. And before she started the tour, she said, we just want to acknowledge here, we've got some Americans in our tour. We want to say that we are forever thankful for the United States for courageously defending us against and freeing us from Nazi tyranny. And, you know, there's that sentiment in Europe still. And for Americans to be told, to tell Europeans that they're unthankful because they won't follow us into Iraq, it's just a non sequitur. They're thankful. They'll always be thankful. We won the Cold War. We won Hitler. But they're not going to follow us into every war. And the war we're in right now, by every European assessment that I've encountered, is worse than a mistake. It's flat out evil and it's empire.
Certainly, and we, you know, it seems like the United Kingdom, they're starting to pull their troops out just recently.
Oh, yeah. The well, Bush, there that. Was just, I just saw John Stewart the other night, Bush was saying we got 30 people in our coalition and 30 nations in our coalition, and these are token forces of 1 to 10 people, you know, who are with us.
Yeah,
over
Iceland
there.
Pulled their one public affairs officer.
That's right.
So that was part of the
story. But, I mean, American, the funny thing for me is the naivety of the American electorate. We buy this stuff. We buy this stuff, and we buy it again and again and again. We don't learn how bogus it is. Europeans are much more savvy and sophisticated politically because they really believe there are nuances in these issues, and they don't boil everything down to bumper stickers. You don't see bumper stickers in Europe.
Right.
You see bumper stickers in America, and worse, you find politicians talking in bumper stickers. But a fundamental difference between America and Europe is politicians in Europe are representing people. Politicians in America are representing corporations, people indirectly because people own corporations, but it is government by and for people via corporations in America, and it's directly people in Europe. Consequently, laws in Europe come about that are good for people even if they're bad for business, and you're less likely to see that in the United States. And in the long run, what's good for people is good for business. That's the European take.
Yeah, I forget the comedian who said it, but he had said he'd wish that American politicians were forced to wear outfits like NASCAR drivers that had their corporate sponsor's logo all over their
coat. Well, that
would
be a good thing. I think American politicians would do well to travel a little bit. It's amazing how untraveled most of our decision makers are. And it's amazing when they do travel, what a skewed view they get because they sit on the rooftop of the Intercontinental Hotel and talk with their ambassador and get an assessment of the situation. They got to get out there on the ground and see what it's like. And it's the same thing about drug policy issues. You know, if people would travel and talk with other law enforcement people, with other people who are in these heroin maintenance clinics, who are in the running the police, who are trying to keep track of all the drug problems in the Netherlands, they would realize there are some pragmatic alternatives that haven't even been considered in the United States. In the United States, we just have to do what is politically expedient, and that's be hard on drugs.
Yeah.
Well, in the United States, you got two options. You can be soft on drugs or hard on drugs. In Europe, there's an alternative. You can be smart on drugs. And that's the message I'm bringing home. That's why I flew to Los Angeles today to kind of rally the troops the best I can here at the normal convention, because we got some work to do.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Just today, I guess it'd be yesterday's paper, Friday's paper, you had that op-ed. There's a 1,000-word op-ed on the back page of the front section of the LA Times regarding this about, it was called the Europe's anti-drug war, drug anti-war, I think I've got that.
Right.
What is the difference in the European perspective with regards to this so-called war on drugs?
Well, America likes to militarize things. I mean, a war on drugs.
A war on nouns.
A war on terror. I mean, a war on whatever. It's not a war in Europe. It's a problem, and they're dealing with it pragmatically. In Europe, they recognize drug abuse as a health issue, not a criminal issue. And the measure of a society's drug policy is how effectively it reduces the harm drug abuse causes its society. Not how many people you lock up, but harm reduction. If America could see drug abuse as a health issue, and if it could measure its effectiveness in harm reduction, we could learn a lot from Europe, and we could help a lot of people. right now, we've got a situation that just congests our legal system, something that demoralizes our police officers, something that really messes up the credibility of parents, teachers, and law enforcement people. And that credibility is important when it comes to teaching young people about the dangers of drug abuse and the consequences of hard drugs and so on.
Yeah, I often say that if you want to be perceived as a leftist radical today in America, just talk like a founding father.
Yeah, you know, isn't that a sad truth?
Yeah, it's very, very sad. Thanks again to Rick Steves from the Travel Channel and from Rick Steves Europe Through the Back Door for the interview back in October. And if you'd like more information on European travel, the number one best site for you to get good information on how to travel through Europe is at ricksteves.com. So check it out, get your information on traveling through Europe, and listen to one of his podcasts while you're at it. Now to review the medical marijuana bill in Kansas and other bills happening in New England, we turn to Normal's deputy director, Paul Armentano. So we're very happy here to be joined by the deputy director of Normal, Paul Armentano. Paul, welcome back to the stash.
Great to be here, Russ.
Yeah, it's very good to have you here. We've just kind of met on the phone at this point, being that I'm the new host of the Stash, so I hope we can keep the dialogue going here. And with regard to our state bills that are happening right now, it looks like we've got some action happening up in the New England area, particularly Vermont and New Hampshire. And you've been following this pretty closely. Can you tell us what's happening up in, well, let's start with Vermont.
Sure. You know, I have to precede all this by saying, as a native New Englander, I am proud to see that New Hampshire is really taking the lead at the moment, or New England, I should say, is taking the lead at the moment as far as really pushing the envelope for responsible marijuana laws when it comes to the adult use of cannabis. And in Vermont in particular, there is a bill, it's Senate Bill 238, and late last week, it did pass out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Were this bill to pass the legislature and be signed into law, it would decriminalize the possession of up to an ounce of marijuana for adults. And what that means is that adults would face a maximum penalty of a fine for possessing marijuana, but they would not face any state criminal charges.
And that's very useful for the people out there, of course, because a lot of the harms that we receive from the criminalization of marijuana has to do with getting the arrest, and there's all those bad things that can happen to you just because you've been arrested. Would this help in that respect, where people wouldn't be subject to the loss of their jobs or any of the other ancillary harms from the criminality?
In fact, it would help a great deal. You know, many people do not serve any real jail time for their first offense for a minor marijuana violation. But as you note, there are several related penalties that adults can face if they simply have a minor marijuana conviction. They can lose their student aid. They can lose certain federal benefits. They may lose their job, depending on whether they are, for instance, a CDL licensed driver. In certain states, you can never adopt a child if you have a marijuana conviction. And on it goes. By moving marijuana possession offenses out of the criminal code and making them a civil infraction or a violation, as this bill would do, you remove the threat of these ancillary penalties as well.
Well, that's excellent. Now, so this is the Vermont decriminalization measure. Now, where is that at in the legislative process, and what are its chances of passing this year?
You know, it's interesting. Vermont, over the last few years, the legislature's gotten quite educated to this issue. You know, normally when you try to pass an issue like this legislatively, it takes several years, and this is the first year that this bill has been introduced and had hearings. So if passed serves as any precedent, usually these things take 2 or 3 years to finally be successful. That said, I'm hoping that the legislature has learned enough regarding in their past debates regarding medical marijuana, and even some broader debates they've had about the taxing and regulating of marijuana in years past, that this bill may be fast-tracked and get through the legislature and get by the governor much more quickly. No state has decriminalized marijuana legislatively since Nevada did so in the beginning of 2001 or 2002. So there's been a long wait for a state to move in this direction, and I'm certainly hoping that Vermont will do so, if not this year, hopefully by next year.
Do we see a pattern then of there being more success in the decriminalization areas in the areas that have also been through the medical marijuana debates? Is there any correlation there?
You know, in the past, actually, I think the correlation went the other way. You saw quite a bit of success in passing medical marijuana legislation in states that were already familiar with and had decriminalization laws on the books for personal use. Certainly saw that trend in Alaska, in Oregon, in Colorado, and arguably some other states as well. This because many state legislatures the last few years have not been debating decriminalization measures. This is really one of the first times we had to see if this trend could also work the other way. And in fact, you may have a state that legislatively has become more comfortable with the concept of no longer penalizing adults who use marijuana for personal reasons because they've simply become more educated and more familiar with the medical use of cannabis.
Yeah, it's been something that I've noticed anecdotally out here in Oregon, where it seems to me that when we have so many people that are successfully in the program and the sky isn't falling, that people tend to reject those notions that have been instilled through the years of stereotyping and demonizing of marijuana. Now Vermont, that's as far as I understand, up in the New England area, Vermont's kind of the more liberal half of those two states up there. And right next door, you've got New Hampshire. Am I correct in that
right
assumption? So in New Hampshire, though, you recently wrote an op-ed there in support of one of their decriminalization measures. So they've got one going too, correct?
Yes, they do. New Hampshire has a very independent streak, as many people know. What they may not know is that it has the largest citizen legislature of any state in the country. There's actually more legislators that work in the state house in New Hampshire than any other state. So local politics really does rule in New Hampshire. New Hampshire has dealt with the decriminalization issue before. There have been several bills that have been debated in past years that sought to actually remove marijuana from the criminal code altogether. Surprisingly, those bills actually gained quite a bit of support among legislators, but they did not gain majority support. Last year, there was sort of a coalition of legislators who were supportive of the decriminalization issue, but said, look, if you really want to get a bill passed into law in New Hampshire, you've got to at least keep marijuana in the criminal code, but we are willing to allow you to no longer have this be a criminal violation. We're willing to make this sanction a fine-only offense. So this time around, legislators are actually debating a bill that would make the possession of up to an ounce and a quarter of marijuana a fine-only offense. And the people that I talk to that are on the ground in New Hampshire really think this bill's got a good shot.
Well, that's excellent. And I, as I listen to this, I think about maybe looking at it from the law enforcement point of view, maybe this is just a profit measure, or maybe not profit, but at least cost-cutting, in that they don't have to pay for the jails and the bookings, and yet they get to have the fine coming in. Maybe it's a win-win for them. I don't know.
You would think, you know, what's funny is, as many of the listeners know, there's a dozen states that have decriminalized the possession of marijuana. I think it's very telling that for some of these states, the 30-plus years these laws have been on the books, they've never recriminalized. So clearly, while law enforcement may bark and they may complain when these bills are proposed, and they may oppose them at that time. Once they pass, it seems that very quickly they learn to live with these laws and accept them.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, we've looked at New England, and of course I'm out here on the West Coast in what me and Alan St. Pierre refer to as the Chile of marijuana reform here, this strip along the Pacific Coast that's incredibly tolerant of marijuana and marijuana culture. So we don't want to forget about our listeners who are in the center of the country where some of the toughest battles are being fought. And you've got news of the battle that's going on right in the heartland of America, right there in Kansas. What's happening in Kansas?
Well, Kansas has an uphill battle before it. There are some really terrific activists that have been working on the ground in Kansas the last couple of years. I really want to give a shout-out to the Kansas Compassionate Care Coalition, led by Laura Green. She worked with legislators to have a bill introduced last week in the Kansas State Senate, Senate Bill 556, that seeks to allow patients who have been arrested for possession or using marijuana, it seeks to allow them to raise an affirmative defense in court. And while this bill does not go nearly as far as the medical marijuana laws in Oregon and California and other states that actually protect patients from arrest, this bill sought to at least allow a judge or a jury or a prosecutor to mitigate marijuana charges in circumstances where an individual is a patient and they're using it under their doctor's supervision. Unfortunately, they had a hearing on Monday. I submitted testimony. Several other patients testified in favor of the bill. But from what I am hearing and from what the media reports of the hearing have been, unfortunately, it appears that many of the legislators on this committee were influenced by the testimony of opponents of the bill, law enforcement, certain doctors that tend to side with prohibitionist groups like Dr. Eric Vogt, and unfortunately they seem to be... that doesn't sound good. Let's start over again on that.
Okay.
Unfortunately, many legislators on this committee, rather than listening to the testimony of seriously ill patients, instead, it appears that their influence lies with the law enforcement representatives who testified against this measure.
Wow, it's amazing that they would feel that way. You know, it's once you've been with these patients and you've seen it firsthand, there's just no doubt that there's a medical efficacy to marijuana. And the least you could do is that if someone were arrested and on trial, they could tell it to the judge and be able to say, I have a medical condition. I'm not any sort of criminal. I just have a medical condition. That's what I, you know, consider affirmative defense to be. It's kind of that last resort, the least they can do. I mean, you're already arrested. You're already booked. You already have all those problems that are attendant with the arrest. And then you get, if you can afford a lawyer and if you can go to court, you can raise that affirmative defense.
Yeah, really. It's amazing to me that legislators with a straight face can say that if you have evidence and you wish to present it to a judge, we don't want to hear it. And in fact, we are going to mandate that the law says that a judge can't hear it.
Yeah. Yeah, we see that in the trials in California, too, when they're having the medical marijuana trials in federal court, and they're not even allowed to say the words medical and marijuana in the same paragraph. It's just ridiculous. It's a sham. It's a travesty of justice. Well, we've been speaking with Paul Armentano, the Deputy Director of Normal, who joins us every week here on the Normal Daily Audio Stash to discuss our government at work. And again, like we say, you know, get involved. You can check us out at normal.org/issues and find out all of the bills that'll be happening at the state level and the federal level and how you can get involved. That's normal.org/issues. Paul, thanks once again for joining us.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our policy analyst is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. and web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org, and you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from former President Richard Nixon, who once said, quote, "Soft-headed psychiatrists who work in places like the National Institute for Mental Health favor marijuana because they're probably all on the stuff themselves," end quote. 37 years later, Nixon's war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs rages on. With your continued support, we will undo the damage Nixon wrought upon our American hemp heritage.